Hello, friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com. Welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I want to invite everyone to go ahead and, I guess, what do you don't like on iTunes, but you can rate us.
We'll take
the good ratings, we'll take the bad ratings, we'll take anything you got. Go ahead and share us with your friends. Let everyone know about the Movie Mavericks.
Tell us you're listening, even let us know you're following us. Let us know you're out there.
Stitcher, anything, anywhere. We like
is
it.
Is this on?
Yeah, hello? Hello, is anyone there? All right, so we got a retro today.
We do. We're going back and looking at the 1999 Arnold Schwarzenegger sci-fi thriller End of Days. I was a big fan of this movie when it came out, and going back and rewatching this, I'm wondering why I was such a big fan of it. Did you have the same feeling, or are you pretty keen on this then and now?
No, I'm still good with it now. I'll tell you why as we get into it.
Okay, well, let's start off with a little bit of background on this. This came out basically Thanksgiving weekend 1999 against stiff competition, most notably Toy Story 2. It ended up grossing about $70 million in the U.S., about $200 million worldwide. Pretty good for the time, but when Arnold Schwarzenegger was getting $25 million a movie, this arguably is the beginning of the downfall, right?
The beginning?
I would say that
Eraser... Would you say maybe a junior?
Well, yeah, of course. But he was coming off Eraser and the Batman film, which didn't do as well, but right. It was not his fault entirely. Eraser got the critical community behind it. The critical community was not behind End of Days. And this was the first time Schwarzenegger had kind of gotten the wrath of the critics since Last Action Hero, five, 6 years before. So I always kind of view this as, then we go into the Collateral Damage and things like that, Sixth Day, and things that were just really underperformers. And he just never achieved that grandiose status he had during the mid-90s again.
Yeah, he never came back for this. This was smack dab in the middle of the downfall, as I see it. Still like this movie. Love The Sixth Day. Love Collateral Damage. Like Eraser.
You know, this is what I consider the second part of the Day trilogy in the Schwarzenegger canon. Do you follow me? We got Judgment Day, we got End of Days, and we got The Sixth Day. If they would have called Kindergarten Cop Daddy Daycare... Or Daddy Daycare Cop, or Daycare even Cop. Just like Daycare Cop. There we go. Thank you. I was looking for that. You know. It was in there somewhere. Did you see this in the theater when it came out?
No, I don't think so.
I did.
No, you did?
It was packed. I remember people loving this movie. I mean, people were like howling on Kevin Pollak's little drop-ins.
Really?
It was a total audience pleaser from what I thought.
All right. I liked him in it, but I don't know. I don't know if it was that good. He didn't really make a huge impression on me or the film, really, I think. This was one of those movies that's a bit overwritten in the sense that they thought they had something a little too special on their hands here. If you watch behind the scenes or the filmmakers on any level of this talk about this movie, it's like, dude, do you guys know what you were making? Did you not read the script?
The script apparently was being manipulated as the movie was going on, and the idea of Schwarzenegger dying in the end, spoiler alert there, if you didn't know, you had 19 years to figure it out, so don't bust my balls. This was not supposed to happen in the original script. Andrew W. Marlowe, who wrote this, also wrote Air Force One and Hollow Man, so to my knowledge, he's only written one good movie, which was Air Force One, and you say this movie's overwritten and underwritten, and you're exactly right. It's got a lot of moving parts that aren't particularly explained. Like, why does the devil choose Gabriel Byrne? And why is the devil character? Why is he allowed to do all these certain things and have all this power, but yet he can't?
But he needs these people, and he needs these people to do stuff for him. I know. These are all the things that I question as well. Until I realized, no. Don't question. This is not a movie that you question with. Just go with it. And I really, really liked the action sequences in this movie. I thought they were directed really well, and they held my attention. Really, every single one of them. You know, what didn't work was any time they tried to evoke any sort of emotion, like when Schwarzenegger meets the devil, right, and he brings back it lets him see what happened when his family was killed. Right.
I disagree. I think that's the best scene.
You think that works?
Mm. I think that's the best scene. I think that whole sequence is beautifully staged.
I think it's underplayed when the guys show up and he's screaming and tries to shoot them and stuff. It's too much. Clearly it's not real. Why does he suddenly think that's real? But so he's not with it in this moment, and somehow he's with it later on when he can fool the devil into taking his hands so he can pull him out the window. This movie's on rocky ground when there isn't just some straight action going on.
Well, now you're smelling what I'm cooking. That's what I've been saying.
Yeah, but I'm good with that. I like the action. You don't like the action? I like the beginning, with the helicopters shows up and flying around. And I'm thinking, God, this is what 90s stuff used to be about. You know, just a fucking helicopter's flying around and I'm excited. Like, that's ridiculous.
There's a visceral
That would never happen
appeal.
Today. There's so many jets and weird things that fly in Marvel movies and shit, and they're not exciting at all. So why is this stupid, cheap helicopter exciting to me? It's nuts.
Because there's a sense of realism that's lost in a lot of action movies today. Do you recall the advertising campaign in this when the 666 number slowly evolved into a 999 and the one came before it, so we knew that the devil, you know, we were misreading it all along, and that that was the big marketing ploy, right? Let's take a quick break here and let our audience listen to the trailer for End of Days.
December 31st, 1999. The end of a century. The end of a millennium. The beginning of the end.
He's coming for you, Christine. Can you see him?
Who are you?
How do you know my name?
He's gonna find you, Christine.
The Dark Angel is loose from his prison!
Get down on the ground!
You don't know what you've done!
Said here the guy spoke to you.
Yeah, so what?
The guy doesn't have a tongue.
Listen to this. I've seen the earth laid to waste. Take it easy. We are the good guys.
They tried to kill me. Why?
She's been chosen.
Chosen for what?
If the Dark Angel consummates your flesh with this human body before midnight on New Year's Eve, then he unlocks the gate of hell.
I've come for my wife, Christine.
May God forgive us!
Let her go.
How can you expect to defeat me when I am forever and you are just a man?
I thought that's a pretty good trailer. But what you were saying about 90s action films, I want to get back to that, because this is, to me, the last of the era. I mean, quite literally the last of the era. It came out right before the millennium change. And this movie is great because it's such a nice little reminder that we were all morons about Y2K and the whole idea that the world was going to end. And, you know, there's all this kind of – which had been touched upon before in Strange Days. Remember the whole millennium thing and the world ending then? But this was a much, much more action-oriented film than that, and less cerebral even. But at some point, Tom Cruise was attached to this, which he probably was to a lot of projects during that time because he was a huge star. Eyes Wide Shut ran over.
Lots
he was
of
doing
people.
Magnolia. Schwarzenegger's the right choice, though, for this, I think.
And the casting's fine with me. I know these guys all got Razzies and or nominated and stuff, but I didn't – Schwarzenegger. You know, Gabriel Byrne was good as Satan. He was evil looking. I got no problem with Robin Tooney. But there was Liv Tyler, Kate Winslet was up for the role. Sam Raimi, Guillermo del Toro was up to direct at one point. This could have been a better movie, I would say.
I would have loved to have seen what del Toro could have done with this.
Or even Sam Raimi, because they would have retooled. This movie's biggest problem, and Schwarzenegger might well think that it's Peter Himes, but I disagree. I think it's the script.
Mm-hmm. Or this cut, because I don't know what the actual script is, but this feels like it was cut strangely, and there's a lot of things that are glanced over really quickly. I don't know if I have to believe that Peter Himes is a smart enough director to not have taken on a project, like regardless of what Schwarzenegger says about Himes, which is funny because let's touch on that for a second. Let's touch on that. Like you said, the behind the scenes of the DVD of this movie in the running commentary, everybody's
which
best
is
friends.
Great if you get a hold of this, because this is back in the 90s when they had real special features, like the special effects stuff is fantastic.
I agree. I think it's a film school on a disc.
If you watch anything on this disc, watch the first special effects featurette about the subway tunnel stuff when they do the crash of the cars. It's amazing that looks as good as it does in the movie when you see what it looks like in real life.
Yeah, that happened to me when I was watching the behind the scenes of Daylight, and they were showing these miniatures of that tunnel, and you went, wow, that's how, and I mean, God, that looks terrible. Yeah. And then you look at it in the movie, that looks good. Still effective 21 years later. Himes is on this project. Schwarzenegger doesn't really believe in him, he says now, that he was the wrong person for it, that he was underlighting things. And this movie is extremely underlit, but that is the Peter Himes style. We interviewed Peter Himes. He cops to the fact that he underlits everything. I'll say this. In a theater, it wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad, I thought, when I watched it, though. And because in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be super dark. I only have the DVD version, which means this is going to be, you know, actually much darker than if this was a Blu-ray or something. And really, it's not that dark. It's completely watchable. I can see everything that's really happening in the shadows and stuff. It wasn't like, when you think about something that's underlit or Peter Himes in general, you think that you might not be able to see it, right?
I think the worst lighting he's ever done is on The Relic, which makes an interesting bookend to this film, or a precursor to it, I should say, because it came out in 97. But I watched that recently on my iPad. Yeah. I hate to say that. And I could barely – I honestly could barely see at times what the fuck was going on. It's frustrating.
That's the movie I was referring to in that sense, because I do always think of him as the Relic guy. That was kind of one of my first introductions to Peter Hyams back in the day, because I used to love those kinds of movies, those old monster cheap ass monster movies and stuff. And that's actually a pretty damn good movie. It just looks so dark.
He was recommended for this project by Jim Cameron, and Schwarzenegger says he ended up insulting Cameron's style, saying he overlit everything and it looks terrible. Now, there is, I guess, argument in that, too, that everything Cameron does has that bluish hue to it, which is his signature lighting style. Mm-hmm. But to criticize Cameron's look, especially at that time when he's arguably the hottest director ever, you know, coming off Titanic, is an asshole move. So I don't know. I guess somewhere in between there is probably the truth. And what we have is a movie that isn't badly directed, and it isn't. The problem isn't the star, but like you said, is the script and this cut. And I got to believe that Schwarzenegger in the studio retooled this, because I don't think Himes would have signed on for a script that is just what we see on screen. I really don't, because it's confused. The iconic scene is when the devil comes out of the bathroom and grabs that woman and kisses her.
Tell me that's actually what I thought was, I always forget that's in there, but yeah, I agree. That sets the stage for this so well. I'm just thinking, oh my God, that's crazy. Like, this is a crazy movie. If the whole rest of the movie was as crazy as that, like devil may care, right? You're the devil. Like, why aren't you doing devil shit?
It's probably the most original thing in a movie that's full of cliches.
Is that,
know?
And of course the mother-daughter sex scene, right? That is such a 90s weird scene.
And it reminds me of a movie called The Devil's Advocate, which I know you've seen. And in fact, Gabriel Byrne to me seems to be doing an Al Pacino type
in a way,
devil.
Right? Yeah.
Maybe this movie was influenced by that in its visual design, because a lot of the same colors, and I know thematically there's a lot of same stuff. But the last action movie of the 90s, and I love the sequence when Schwarzenegger goes, and I call it, he just gears up. You know what I mean? The classic Schwarzenegger scene where he goes and gets all the gear, laces himself, guns himself up, armed to the teeth, and goes out there to confront that enemy. And the last 30 minutes of this movie is a really well-done action film. But that first hour and 10 minutes, it moves extremely slow, and I have too many questions. I mean, this movie, you cannot really think about it. Like, let me ask you something.
No, I agree.
When he goes to the church for the first time.
Uh-huh.
Are they just performing exorcisms and stigmatas behind an unlocked door to some random church?
Yeah, I did not really understand the whole depiction of the church in this, but I felt like this movie was and very much grounded in what the 90s did to a lot of things like this. They just kind of take that 15-year-old boy or even younger, like, mentality of something or what they think something would look like. The church is fighting evil and they're doing these things, so here it is, right? But no explanation for why or what the hell I'm looking at, right? So the best thing I could say about this is that at least this movie stays true to the universe it takes place in the sense that everything is about devil and God and religion and things, right? Like this all together, it makes sense, right? Because the devil just came back. So it kind of makes sense that the church is like fighting some holy war. Kind of makes sense, right?
I've never understood, though, the whole point. So the devil has to come back and mate with this girl,
right,
who is somewhat of an offspring of his, or was marked at birth to be his lover once she came of age.
Yeah.
But they're supposed to have a child together?
No, it makes no sense, because there's no way that even within all this, they say, you know, 1,000 years, this and that. But how long has this been taking place for? If it's the Bible, what? The Earth's only 4,000 years old, though.
So this has happened.
See,
we've escaped this three previous times.
I don't
times.
Know. Yeah, I guess.
There is good use of sound design in this movie. I mean, let's get away from the story, because we can poke holes in that all day. I think the sound design and opening scene where we see Schwarzenegger with the gun to his head and there's a knock on the door. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that kind of stuff that happens in this movie. And I think the Kevin Pollak character, we talked about that earlier. He is the standard, you know, 90s sidekick.
Yeah, standard. I know.
I mean, AKA Rob Schneider. And
they all feel like him.
They were inspired by the Joe Pesci's of Lethal Weapon 2, sure. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I know. He's very standard. And it's just like casting that makes sense. Like, that dude's a sidekick? Yeah. All right. I'm fine with that, you know.
But I think a bar for the sidekick in these movies to me was Tom Arnold in True Lies, because he truly was good in those roles. I mean, he came on, said his bit, and then disappeared and wasn't.
Well, he gave you the feeling that he was living a life outside of that sidekick thing, you know. Whereas like Kevin Pollak here, you know, really feels like he doesn't exist when he's not on screen, you know, as a character. Whereas I think the Tom Arnold, I could just imagine him continuing getting into shit, you know, constantly just running his mouth and doing all kinds of stuff just when he's not even around Arnold, you know?
Yeah. This movie, to me, I love it. It's a Schwarzenegger movie where he's like a total alcoholic, lives off pizza, yet is jacked.
He works out though all the time.
Yeah, I mean, this guy is barely pulling himself out of bed, but he's just got, you know, 24-inch biceps.
That's your classic, like, just your classic, like, Superman persona, right? Isn't it? Especially from like anything that is dark from the 90s is always the guy's drinking heavily, but. Dude's super ripped.
Well, yeah. Well, it's even like, all right. it's like the Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon or Bruce Willis, you know, hungover. But I'm gonna get out there and get the job done today, boss. you know, when he probably would call in sick.
Well, Bruce Willis, I could believe a little more. He's not so ripped.
Well, that's what he sold his whole persona off, right? His whole screen presence was he's the everyman of all these guys.
Right.
But did you notice the actor that was playing the Pope in this movie? Did you recognize him as Ace Ventura's landlord?
I don't know. I didn't.
Ventura, that guy. Did you recognize him?
No.
Oh, man. Which is funny because he referenced to him and goes, "Yes, Satan," if you recall. And now he's playing the Pope. So I'm like, oh, this guy's career went full circle. Well, Schwarzenegger was coming off of major heart surgery in this movie or as this movie was being made. And I guess insurance people were on set constantly. And that didn't go over too well either. So do you think this movie feels like a bad production, a rush production, a missed opportunity of sorts?
Well, yeah. I mean, I feel like the script wasn't ready for this to be a movie. You know, it's not a movie. This is just a series of action set pieces, right? That's how this plays to me. Which is why I like it, but it's not a great film. I don't even think it's a good movie, right? But it is a great action movie if you're just looking for action set pieces one by one, because it really has some just fantastic action sequences. And the subway crash alone is fantastic. It's one of those bigger than life 90s action sequences.
Mm-hmm. So was the ending scene in the church with everything getting going to hell, quite figuratively. I love that he when Schwarzenegger died on the sword at the end there, mm-hmm. I just thought, you know, God, this is so iconic to me because it visually signaled to me like we're moving away from this. I mean, The Matrix had come out earlier in the year and changed action films. Mm-hmm. Star Wars The Phantom Menace had come out in the summer and was showing you that everything was going digitized and CG'd. Mm-hmm. And it just, to me, was like, we are going to go so far away from this. And then particularly when 9/11 happened, it was a faux pas for a long time to show action films set in any sort of urban environment. Now in 2017, going into 2018, that's back in the game and they can show cities being destroyed all the time in blockbusters. But for a long time, that was not an acceptable thing for audiences to see. So this kind of film existed in a vacuum in a long way, in a sense of, you know, it just,
yeah.
We've come a long way since then, and we'll never get a movie like this that was released to this level that had this much marketing behind it with a star like this, because they don't make movies like this, quite frankly. I mean, for better or worse, they do not make movies like this anymore that get this kind of release. And I don't think I think there's an audience that's not being served, not just you and I, you know, specifically, but I think that a greater level, there's not an audience that's being served these kind of movies. And when they do come out, they're minor. They're things like The Mechanic Resurrection. And you know what I mean? They're not of this caliber production. And I would love to see Guillermo del Toro go back and get somebody to do a movie like this and not make it about a love story between a fish and a woman, you know? Although I haven't seen his new film, so that's an unfair shot.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I don't think there's not many people out there willing or wanting to make movies like this at this point, you know? Even, I don't know, even when you look at the ones that do get greenlit and work and that are big, you're looking at, like, The Expendables, you know? It's almost a joke on itself.
It's almost like a spoof, yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately. And then something like Escape Plan doesn't do very well anyways, and then it's like, well, that's that, you know, unfortunately, because I like Escape Plan.
So do I.
And I would love to get an End of Days 2.
But instead, you get something like the Da Vinci Code trilogy, and End of Days is better right. than any of those films. I'm sorry, it is. From any point of view, from the writing and from the filmmaking and to the acting in that last one. Tom Hanks being confused and frightened.
Absolutely horrendous.
I'll put Schwarzenegger crying over his daughter's music box up against Tom Hanks doing his memory loss thing in that movie any day.
I would agree with that. Those are obviously have that book angle to it, you know. I can't think of an action movie that would have a book angle to it, really. Everything's so futuristic now.
Really, I think the Mission Impossible franchise is the last.
Yeah, those would be the last ones.
Ones that have even some sort of a human angle to it, that, and even those are starting to become aided a little bit more by CGI than they were previously. But that's right. still one man doing his thing, you know. One main character doing his thing.
Your next bet on that is Fast and Furious, but that is so far more towards comic book than that how that franchise started. It's not the same thing at all anymore.
And that started the same company, but that was, you know, the moving into that new era of the new who we thought was going to be the guy to carry the torch. And even The Rock, we thought was going to be the guy to carry the torch. And his career now is very calculated and almost I can't. I mean, we have to do a whole podcast on The Rock. I mean, I love Dwayne Johnson, but his career at this point, it seems very calculated and almost just.
That's how everyone's career is, though, right? I mean, you mentioned Tom Cruise. That's exactly how his career is. Everything's so corporate, clean, and sleek right now. No one's trying. There's no innovation happening at all anywhere. No one's really taking any sort of risk when it comes to filmmaking at this point. It's just. It's kind of stagnant a little bit, you know. Even the big guns are just making the normal run-of-the-mill sleek action-y type movies that won't offend anyone or won't, I don't know, try to do anything different than anybody else has done, you know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I don't know if End of Days could even come out today because of the watch groups on different things and the defamation leaks and that
sex,
kind of stuff.
There's no way, right? I mean, there's that opening scene we talked about where he kisses the
woman in the restaurant,
woman and grabs her breast, and Yeah, and a guy that guy when you see her husband or whatever, the people they're meeting for some reason, I don't know, they don't explain as that movie goes. Right. But I just kept thinking, God, that guy looks just like Gene Siskel from Outside the Window.
Probably not by mistake. Not by mistake. Well, so you're glad we went back and watched this, even though it has flaws and qualms. You have qualms with it, but you're glad we saw it.
Yeah, but I was really excited for the action stuff. Really got me back in the mode of I guess just filmmaking, you know, seeing, oh, there's another side to story. If there's no story, you can still have good filmmaking. You know, there's another side to movies. That I think we forget about because it just comes so easy, it seems like, nowadays. You don't even need a director anymore, you know. But you still need a good story. You still need a good script and stuff. But, yeah, they get away with no-name nobodies and just doing whatever they want. And this producer-run Hollywood, it stinks.
Yeah, right? It stinks. I still think that this movie would have been better served with a director like Guillermo del Toro or Sam Raimi, just to lighten things up a little bit. Visual, I mean, like, quite literally lighten things up, because I own the DVD of this, and the color palette is beautiful. I mean, the darks of the church and the reds, and it is nice, mm-hmm. but there are a couple times when you just want to see a little bit more of what's going on. And but he has an effective style, Himes does, of editing and using a soundtrack and using darkness to
and it's
his
so
great
stark
effect.
Right, I mean, the movie's yeah. just so stark that it's
it does work
great
with the theme,
it works
so,
so well.
I can't complain there.
And when you have a moment with Gabriel Byrne being totally just evil and dark and stuff in that setting, it everything just kind of falls into place, doesn't it, in a way?
It almost seemed like he was doing it on purpose because he wanted to make these beautiful paintings come to life, almost like these. Because there are a couple scenes where you're like, oh, it looks like a Renaissance era painting. But having seen Sudden Death and Time Cop, I know he can in Capricorn One and Running Scared, all these movies, he can light things that you can see. You know, I'd like to see Schwarzenegger do his thing a little bit more than I get to in this movie. But I do like that rooftop chase, although I'll never understand how they could ever think a priest was going to be a sniper. Where did he get? And they're like surprised that he missed, you know? Like, I didn't even get him close to hitting that. But one of the many, many questions this movie raises and doesn't answer. So I wasn't a big fan going back and looking at this, although I do own it. So I do have a soft spot for this movie and what it represents, but a little hard to get through it for me this time. That's going to wrap up our retro for tonight. Like Trevor said, please go to the iTunes. Let us know you're following. Leave us a comment. Do anything there with all the iTunes metrics. It does help get us listed higher there on the ratings. So please do that if you like this show. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.